Chapter 5 Edric woke everyone before the sun was fully up the next morning. He said he wanted to get an early start, but I had the feeling that he was afraid the maidens from the town might embarrass him again if we stayed longer. I was still tired, so I chose to ride in the carriage with Lil and Shelton. Maybe I'd be able to sleep a little longer.
Lil told me about the sea monster, Shelton announced once the carriage was underway.
I heard the noise and went to investigate, said Lil.
That thing was big. Edric was brave to fight it the way he did. When it dragged him into the water, I was sure we'd never see him again. But then he popped up like a cork and climbed out.
I could feel a knot form in my stomach. Edric was in the river?
For a really long time, she said.
I wish I had been there, said Shelton. I could have shown him how to fight a sea monster. Remember when the three of us climbed into that sea monster's mouth and...
I remember, I said, not wanting to think about Edric facing something like that alone. No longer sleepy, I signaled for my carriage to stop long enough for me to get out and reach Gwynny. Edric was happy to see me and just as tired as I was. We rode together, enjoying each other's company without needing to say a word. After a time, I dozed in the saddle, and Edric may have as well. When my head nodded sharply, waking me with a start, we were in the foothills and could see the snow-capped mountains in the distance. By noon, we'd entered a pine forest so dark that it seemed as if night had fallen. I was wondering how much farther we'd have to go when Edric said, as if reading my thoughts, "My parents' castle isn't far once we get out of this forest." "So we'll reach it tonight?" I asked, looking forward to a nice, soft bed. "No, but at the rate we're going, we'll be there tomorrow. We're making really good time. If I didn't know better, I'd say that it was almost magical." Edric smiled when he said it, but I thought he looked a little wistful. "It would have been a lot faster if some people had more understanding subjects in their kingdoms," I muttered.
"Isn't it almost time to eat?" Edric asked, patting his stomach.
I glanced up, but the trees blocked my view of the sky. When I started to look away, something dark darted past at the edge of sight.
"What was that?" I asked.
"I didn't see anything," said Edric.
Another dark shape shot through the trees, squawking.
"Did you see that?"
Edric shrugged.
"It was probably just a crow."
"It was too big to be a crow," I said, shaking my head. And then they were all around us, landing beside the horses like a small, noisy flock. If Bright Country hadn't stayed so calm, I'm sure Gwynny wouldn't have either. But she only snorted and pranced a few paces, letting me calm her with my hand and a few soft words. The knights behind us had a more difficult time with their mounts, who bucked and fought the reins while the carriage horses screamed and tried to rear up. Although it seemed like more at first, only four witches hopped off their broomsticks, cackling and talking all at once.
"Hello there, lovebirds," called a familiar voice.
It was Oculura, the witch who had moved into the old cottage in the enchanted forest near my castle. Her sister, Dyspepsia, was there as well, looking as sour-faced as ever. I'd never seen the other witches before.
"Why don't you introduce us?" said the shorter of the two, a woman with curiously pale skin.
"Princess Emeralda? Prince Edric," said Oculura. "I'd like you to meet my friends, Chlorine and Ratinky. Chlorine is the pushy one."
The witch who had asked for an introduction had come forward with her hand extended. It took me a moment to realize that she wanted to shake mine.
"Pleased to meet you,"
she shouted, pumping my hand up and down until my shoulder ached.
"I've heard so much about you two. When we learned that you were going to pass through our woods, I made sure we came out to greet you."
I nodded, slightly dumbfounded. Chlorine had a very odd way of talking. Not only did she speak loudly, enunciating each word distinctly, but she paused after each sentence as if waiting for someone else to speak, although it was obvious that she hadn't finished what she was going to say. I waited for her to say something else until she looked at me expectantly and smiled.
Yes. Well, it's nice to meet you,"
I said, turning to Edric for help when the woman wouldn't let go of my hand. He didn't notice, however, because he was squirming under the unyielding gaze of the other witch, Ratinki. Skinny and wrinkled like an old apple, she had to be one of the oldest women I had ever met. With the dirt on her clothes and skin, and the odor wafting toward us, she also had to be one of the smelliest.
"Let go of her hand,"
said Oculora to Chlorine, prying the little witch's fingers from mine. My hand had gone numb, so I shook it while they both looked at me apologetically.
"Sorry," Chlorine nearly shouted. "I'm not used to talking to real people. I live in a cave with an echo for company."
"You remember me, of course," said Dyspepsia, looking grumpy.
As I'd invited them to visit us at the castle only the week before, I thought it was a very odd question. "Hello, Dyspepsia," I said. "It's nice to see you again." Apparently mollified, she grunted and rubbed the small of her back.
"Back's paining me again. Broom riding does it every time."
"Got anything to eat around here?"
interrupted Chlorine. Edric perked right up, turning away from Ratinki for the first time since her arrival. He grinned when I said, "I'll see what I can do." While the servants tended to the horses and the knights stood guard, Edric and I joined the witches at the base of a tree. I'd invited the ladies-in-waiting to sit with us, but after seeing our guests, Lucy claimed that she'd rather eat our normal travel fare in the shelter of the carriage. Hortense made a point of sitting between me and Ratinki, who spit onto her palm and used the moisture to wash her hands. Although Hortense looked horrified, she didn't say anything to the witch. We were making ourselves comfortable on the blanket when Ratinki spoke for the first time. In a rough and gravelly voice, she turned to Hortense and said,
"I saw the way you looked at me. I'm going to turn you into a slug for that."
Pointing a wavering finger, the old woman said,
"That young woman sitting there didn't have to stop and stare. Make her be a slimy slug, a slippery, gooey, squishy bug."
"No, wait," I said, throwing up my hand as I recited a quick blocking spell. There was a soft fizzling sound, and nothing happened. Hortense continued to sit there, looking as prim and proper as always. When it was obvious that she wasn't going to change, I turned to Ratinki and said, "Please don't cast spells on anyone in my party. I need to get them back to my kingdom just as they left it."
"You are good," the old witch growled. "Oculura said that you were powerful, but I didn't believe her until now. I've never seen anyone block one of my spells before. And that was fast, too."
She scowled and rubbed her mottled scalp under her wispy white hair.
"You'll have to excuse them," said Oculura. "Ratinki and Chlorine live deep in the woods and don't talk to people very often."
"Do you live in a cave, too?" I asked Ratinki.
"Wouldn't dream of it," she exclaimed. "Damp, nasty things. I have a nice little one-room hovel with a good rebuilding spell. Every time the villagers burn it down, it's back 3 days later, good as new."
Even Edric looked horrified. "The villagers burn your home?" Ratinki nodded.
"Every few years. I don't mind too much. Gets rid of the vermin."
"Why don't you move away?" I asked.
"Why should I? They aren't bad folk, aside from pelting me with rotten vegetables and setting their dogs on me and stealing my food and..."
"Burning your hovel?"
Chlorine said helpfully.
"Yeah, that too," said Ratinki. "Aside from those things, they leave me alone and I leave them alone, and that's the way it should be. Besides, if I moved away, who would I spy on when I got bored?"
Edric's stomach rumbled, reminding me of why we were sitting there. The food we'd brought with us was bland and none too plentiful, so after casting a quick searching spell to make sure that no one else from Upper Monte Vista was around, I pointed at the center of the blanket and said, pies and cakes and hot eel stew, tarts and breads and berries new. Bring us lots of tasty food. We're in a hungry kind of mood.
Wow,
said Chlorine when the food appeared on the blanket. You can do that. I wish I could. Then I'd never go hungry again. I don't do it very often, I hurried to say when I saw Edric's expression. He looked as if he'd just won the biggest prize in the biggest tournament. Actually, I'd never made food purely through magic before, so I was a little apprehensive about how it would taste. I needn't have worried.
This is good, said Ratinky through a mouthful of fresh bread.
Sampling the eel stew, Chlorine exclaimed,
This is better than good! This is the best food I've ever eaten!
I'm glad you like it, I said, watching Edric take an entire rhubarb pie. I sat back, eating very little while enjoying the blissful looks on our guests' faces. I was curious, though. Was Ratinky's treatment at the hands of the townspeople typical? When Chlorine began to slow down, I asked her, And how well do you get along with your neighbors?
Who, me? She replied. Just fine. My closest neighbor is a nymph who lives in the bottom of a lake in my cave. I don't see her very often, but when I do, she's always friendly.
I meant your non-magical neighbors. Chlorine shrugged.
None of them lives very close. The ones who come by don't know I'm there.
You did have that one run-in, though, said Oculura.
That was years ago. I was young and foolish then. I helped a girl find her soulmate, but he didn't like her when she found him. She was disappointed and told her whole village that I'd ruined her life. They came after me, and I had to hide in the woods. That's when I found my cave. So it was a good thing after all. Any more of those tarts? I really like the ones with blueberries.
Even Edric finished before Chlorine and Ratinky, who ate until the very last crumb was gone. When it was time for them to leave, they had eaten so much that they had to struggle to get their brooms off the ground while Oculura and Dyspepsia circled impatiently above them. I was climbing back into my carriage when Hortense came running over.
I didn't want to say anything in front of those women, but their manners are atrocious, and the stories they tell, I shudder to think about it. I hope you aren't going to let yourself be unduly influenced by them. Your mother would never approve if she knew you were keeping company with women like that.
I sighed and paused my foot on the step. I'm sure you're right. She doesn't approve of most of the things I do. I'd started to pull myself into the carriage when Hortense placed her hand on my arm.
That's not all, she said. I wanted to thank you for what you did back there. Thank you for stopping that horrid woman from...
Turning you into a slug?
Yes, she said, cringing. Precisely.
You're welcome, I said. Although, may I suggest that the next time you encounter someone you find disagreeable, you not let it show on your face? I may not always be around to stop them. Hortense nodded.
Yes, she said, her expression serious. I'll have to work on that.
It wasn't until we stopped for the night that Edric and I discussed what the witches had told us. Lil had already left for her nightly excursion and wouldn't be back until morning. Everyone else except the guards and Hortense had gone to their tents. The senior lady-in-waiting was not about to shirk her duty, and I knew she wouldn't go to bed until I did. With our backs to the fire, Edric and I shared a large rock while we watched the dancing shapes that the flames cast on the trees around us. I didn't know life was so awful for witches here, I said. Poor Ratinky seems to think that living the way she does is normal. I had no idea, said Edric. I reached for his hand and squeezed it. You have to do something. Make some sort of decree or law or something. Edric picked up a pebble and chucked it into the woods. I can when I'm king, but there's not much I can do about it now. Even then, I don't know if it would do much good. I can't make people like someone. Witches in Greater Greensward are treated with respect, but it's different here. I don't understand why these witches stay in Upper Monte Vista if they're so obviously hated. Edric shrugged. It's where they've always lived. They don't know that it doesn't have to be this way. Besides, having a green witch is why witches are respected in Greater Greensward. You help keep it safe to live there. The witches here don't help at all. Why should they? People get angry with them when they try. You heard Chlorine. When the girl she helped wasn't happy with the results, she turned on the witch who had helped her. Maybe that isn't the kind of help the people of Upper Monte Vista really need, he said, swatting at a mosquito tickling his cheek. I opened my mouth to reply, then closed it with a snap. Maybe Edric was right. Maybe they needed help, but only of a certain kind. I wished there was something I could do about it. While Edric and I shared a long and pleasant kiss, Hortense cleared her throat and muttered to herself, letting us know that she disapproved. She was still watching us when we said goodnight and retired to our tents. I was almost asleep when the werewolves started to howl. They sounded awfully close, certainly close enough to make everyone nervous. I heard the guards talking and the jangle of metal as the men who were supposed to be off duty joined them. Voices from the other tents told me that nearly everyone else was awake as well, although I thought I heard Edric snoring. Back home, I would have chased away the werewolves long before this, but I'd been so conscious of not upsetting the Upper Monte Vistans that I'd done nothing, hoping that the creatures would leave us alone. But lying there in the dark, listening to the worried voices of the people around me, I knew that I'd have to take some sort of action, or spend the night waiting for the first step of a stealthy paw, the first ragged scream cut short. Slipping out of my tent, I told the closest guard to let the others know that I would take care of it and that they needn't worry. Jumpy people shoot at anything that moves, and a stray arrow in my back was the last thing I needed. I made my way only a short distance into the woods, then took on the most effective form I knew, the one that had become second nature to me over the last few months, a dragon. The change was fast now, so fast that it happened between one breath and the next, but with great speed came great pain. When I could breathe again, I was iridescent peridot green with dark emerald claws and pale green translucent wings, more than 15 feet long and able to breathe fire. Like Ralph's mother, I had acquired a taste for gunga beans and flammy peppers. Raising my wings above my head, I brought them down in a mighty sweep that brushed the boughs on either side and lifted me above the tops of the trees. I'd been facing the direction of the werewolves' voices, but they'd moved, and I moved with them. Dragons can see perfectly well in the dark, and can switch from normal vision to the kind that sees the heat that warm bodies give off. I used both, noting the doe and her twin fawns asleep side by side, the squirrels curled up in their nests, and the paler warmth of the turtle losing the heat it had absorbed during the day. Wolves were easy to find, but I was hunting werewolves, who were smarter than their non-magical counterparts and far more malicious. The first time I'd encountered them, I'd hoped that I could talk them into leaving my kingdom. But werewolves are devious and won't listen to logic. I'd had to singe their tails with flame to drive them out then, and every time after that. I already knew that I'd have to do the same now. Following their trail, I circled around toward our camp. I was in no mood for conversation, certainly not with hairy ruffians who liked ripping throats out and would be more than happy to lap the blood of my entourage. With a roar that shook the pine trees until needles rained from the boughs, I swept down on them, breathing a long pinpoint of flame that stopped just short of their furry backs, hurting them ahead of me. I was congratulating myself on a job well done when the pack split in two, leaving me to choose which faction to follow. Picking the smaller group, I tried to herd them back to their fellows, but found that I had to chase each werewolf when they went their separate ways. Because I had no desire to start a fire that could engulf a dry pine forest, and knew that flaming too often might do just that, I decided to use a talent other than fire. Twisting and turning between the trees, I flew just above werewolf height, following the biggest beast. Dragons can fly faster than the swiftest horse can gallop, so I had no problem catching up with the werewolf and snatching its tail with my claws. The werewolf writhed in my grasp, snapping and snarling, but it weighed too much to turn back on its own tail and reach me. Hauling the werewolf into the air, I carried it to the top of the tallest tree and deposited it on one of the sturdier branches. A regular wolf might have squirmed and fallen to its death, but a werewolf possessed human cunning as well as the animal kind. Crying pitifully, the werewolf held onto the swaying branch while I collected its packmates one at a time. When I'd gathered the entire pack, I grasped a tail in each of my clawed feet and carried them out of the woods and up the side of a mountain, depositing them on the shores of an isolated island surrounded by near-freezing water before flying back down the mountain for more. If it had been my kingdom, I would have carried them even farther. Since it wasn't, I just wanted them to stay away until we had left their territory. When I'd moved the last of them, I turned and headed toward our camp. Before landing, however, I checked to make sure that everyone was all right, then flew on, not wanting to stop being a dragon just yet. There were only two drawbacks to being a dragon. First, it made me feel fearless, and sometimes a little fear was a very good thing. I took risks when I was a dragon that I never would have considered as a human. Second, being a dragon was so much fun, so exciting, so enticing, that it was tempting to stay that way a little bit longer each time. My greatest fear, however, was that if I did, I might want to stay that way forever. Turning back into my human self was particularly difficult that night. Chasing down the werewolves had taken most of the night, making me remain in my dragon form longer than I ever had before. Being a dragon felt so right, so perfect for me, that I began to wonder if I really had to go back. Physically, I felt wonderful. My blood coursed hotter, my muscles were stronger. I could fill my lungs with one deep breath and hold it for minutes at a time. My reflexes were faster, too, and my mind seemed sharper. And there were so many things that a dragon could do that a human could scarcely imagine. I could fly, swooping low or soaring high, pivoting on a wingtip or gliding for endless miles. I could bathe in lava or burrow through mountains of ice, and all the while feel as comfortable as a human on a warm spring day. A whole world waited to be explored in a way only dragons could manage. If I remained a dragon, I could see sights no human had ever seen, go places no human had ever gone. I'd never have to put up with people like Frizella or my mother or... And then I thought about my dear, sweet Edric, who never failed to hold my hand when he thought I might be frightened, who always tried to come between me and danger even when I didn't need him to, and who cared how I felt about nearly everything. Edric was kind and strong and brave and honorable, the kind of knight that other knights only claimed to be. He was also the love of my life, no matter what form I happened to take. Although staying a dragon meant that I'd be free to do whatever I wanted to for the rest of my life, I already had something even better waiting for me in a tent, snoring so loudly that I could almost believe I heard him from far away. I could be a dragon now and then, but I knew that I could never leave Edric for long. Dipping one wing, I turned around again, heading back to camp and the far more ordinary life of a human witch.